Hola.
Ahí va a ser.
¿Cómo están? Bienvenidas, bienvenidos otra vez a un episodio más de nuestro podcast de Science Institute México. Estamos en un espacio hermoso y diferente. Si tienen justo YouTube, por favor véanos, porque está muy bonito este lugar.
Es
Estamos en
nuevo para
un estudio
nosotros.
de grabación de doble altura con un tratamiento acústico. Bueno, no, ya me iba a poner muy
Ya.
técnico, pero es nuestro live room principal o uno de nuestros
Exacto.
live rooms principales.
Bueno, pues ya le doy la bienvenida, por supuesto, a Chava, que está
Hola.
aquí al lado de mí, director de marketing de SAE. ¿Cómo estás, Chava?
Muy bien, Goye.
Qué
Muchas
bueno.
gracias.
Qué gusto.
Emocionado por nuestro invitado del día de hoy.
Muy emocionados. Yo también. Camarillo, ¿cómo estás?
Muy bien.
Profesor de guión aquí en SAE Instituto
Y
México.
de cine
Y
en
de cine.
general, ¿no? Porque
Sí.
va más allá del guión. Muchas gracias. Qué
Cierto.
bonita introducción. ¿Tú eres?
Y yo soy la Goye. Agradecemos, por supuesto, a nuestros productores por hacer esto posible. Gracias, Resonancia. Y le damos. Ah, no, por supuesto, tenemos. ¿Dónde nos ven, Chava? ¿Dónde
Sí.
nos
No se
escuchan? ¿Dónde
pierdan
nos pueden
estos,
ver?
no se pierdan todos los episodios nuevos y el histórico de este podcast en nuestro sitio web, mexico.sae.edu/podcast. Ahí está todo.
Buenísimo, pues ahí no hay excusas para que no nos escuchen y nos vean. Estamos justo festejando, ¿no? El aniversario de SAE,
13 años.
13 años. Qué felicidad, de verdad, ya 13 años aquí en México, formando a
Estaba
líderes en la industria.
viendo al comité
Industrias
organizador
creativas.
del aniversario, por aquí hay un par. Y les decía, muchachos, ya ustedes son la nueva generación, ya a mi edad ya no puedo estar organizando aniversarios, pero me tocaron los primeros, nos tocaron los
Nos
primeros.
a mí
Tocaron los
también me
primeros, por
tocaron
supuesto. A
los
mí me tocó
primeros.
el
Te
primer
tocaron los
aniversario,
primeros.
claro. Entonces, el pase de estafeta a la nueva generación para festejar nuestro 13º aniversario. Muy buen trabajo, chicos. Ha sido un aniversario increíble.
Muchas felicidades y que sean muchos, muchos más. Y justo por eso tenemos aquí un invitado súper especial que, por supuesto, ha participado en el aniversario, Nat Powers.
Ay, buenos.
Hola, ¿cómo
Buenas,
estás,
buenas,
Nat?
Nat.
¿Qué
¿Qué
tal?
tal?
Buenos días.
Thank you. Gracias.
Vamos a hablar en español, por supuesto.
¿Qué?
All the episode is going
Pobre.
to be speak in Spanish. That was the surprise.
Amazing.
Nat is
I'm
freaking
ready.
out.
This is sponsored by Duolingo, right?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, let's go. Vamos.
Nat, it's really nice to have you here.
It's a
We're
pleasure
all
to be
thrilled
here.
of having you
Thank
here.
you for having me.
Please introduce yourself. I think it's better
Yeah.
if you introduce
Yeah,
yourself.
sure. I'm Nat Powers, obviously. I'm a music producer and a songwriter and a creative, and I'm from England, as you can hear. Yeah, and I've been in the industry since 2009. I've been making music for 23 years, and I come from a very creative background, from the day I was born. And I'm a part of a production trio now called Octaves. There's three of us, and we are trying to work in every single market on the planet. So
I mean,
here we are.
now that you said that you have like a very interesting background, I would like you to tell us a little bit more about it because we were just talking about it 5 minutes ago,
See?
and I think it's very interesting what
Okay.
you lived.
Yeah, so my parents, who recently passed away, were very creative. No, they are very creative people. I don't believe, just because someone died, their essence ends. So my parents are very creative people. And being kind of raised in that and incubated in that from a young age, was a very powerful thing for me. So my dad was some kind of a genius, a very troubled person, but he conducted orchestras. He worked in the beat poetry generation. He played eight or nine instruments. He was a poet, published poet. He played in punk bands in the 70s. He was a professor of literacy in the 80s, and he was a heroin addict in the 90s. So,
Okay.
and then in the 2000s, he kind of found himself and quit everything,
Okay.
and finally reached his like peak, and then he got dementia and passed away. So, my dad had a very colorful life. My mum did too. My mum was like a folk musician. She was into that. She was a creative, artistic. She made things. Everyone that knows her has something she made. So yeah, just being around that and having that influence from, I mean, it's in my DNA, I guess, has been a very powerful thing for me.
It blows my head, man, because any kind of algorithm of Google or anything related has just exploded with these keywords: punk, poetry,
Say,
orchestra, folk, beat. So it's a pretty interesting
Man,
background, man.
man, when my dad passed away, he left behind 10,000 books,
Oh my God.
and I took about 2,000. you know, there's like esoteric knowledge and philosophy and psychology. You know, one of my biggest sort of interests is psychology, or the way the mind works, emotions, which is why I do what I do in the education space.
I attend your speak yesterday.
Oh yeah.
And I was kind of shocked or surprised about the take you have, like in the mind of a young person that wants to get in the industry.
Yeah.
How was it? Accept rejection?
Accepting rejection.
Accepting rejection. So yeah, exactly. Could you elaborate this idea?
Yeah, absolutely, man. So from my experience in my life and watching other people's lives, rejection is one of the things that kills people. It doesn't just end your career or end your possibilities. I think it kills people. You know, this adds to so many other problems. Like when you get rejected, you can find yourself in a whirlpool of depression and anxiety, and then that leads to other things. In the worst case, suicide. I've lost friends to suicide, you know, in the music business and outside of the business. So for me, you know, I had a lot of rejection too. My dad left our family when I was 5, you know. So as much as I say, you know, my dad was amazing, talented, he also had no emotional intelligence whatsoever.
He was human.
He was a human. I fully forgave my dad before he died, 2 months before he died. So, you know, I'll digress a little bit. I had a lifetime of hating my dad for 32 years because I was the only boy, full of testosterone, you know, and I didn't really like the guy. But, you know, I did Hongos for the first time in 2021 in December. And 6 months later, I forgave my dad because my experience with the psychedelic world was it melted my hatred away. It showed me how much I love my dad. Mm-hmm. So I forgave him. And then 2 months later, he died in my arms. So, you know, I got to have such a beautiful experience seeing that. You know, it was a very hard experience, but it was a very real experience. So I think, you know, that was my biggest thing I was carrying my whole life, was my dad, you know, leaving me. You know, that was rejection. I felt rejected. You know, the only boy, I need my dad. You know, who's going to teach me how to be a man? So I felt rejected, man. But I overcame that with the assistance of Hongos, obviously.
That's the kind of Spanish that you learn the most quickly.
Yeah, absolutely, exactly. So, you know, I overcame that with the assistance of that experience, but I did the work. You know, it still came from within me. So for me, the biggest level of rejection was my dad leaving me and my family. You know, it broke my mum. You know, my mum was never the same after that. You know, I think it was the beginning of the end for both of them because they were soulmates. So, you know, I think they should have always been together, but it wasn't part of their story. So for me to see myself overcoming that rejection and various other rejections in the music business and in life, I realized that if I can do it, I can teach people how to do it. You turn rejection into something that kind of charges you up like a battery rather than like breaks you down. Rejection is like a superpower.
If I was this young lad that wants to get into the industry,
yeah,
how you relate something so heavy, so personal, and so introspective, to give a young guy advice?
I mean, it's what I tell everyone. I'm like, you're gonna get rejected for the rest of your life.
So get used to it.
and I think that's good.
Yeah, because get used to it, and also learn how to adapt. Like, learn how to, you know, we all can make decisions, and the problem is in life is a lot of the decisions we make are not so conscious.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we, you know, when you react to something or respond to something in an aggressive way or a sad emotional way or a triggered way, that is a choice. Whether you know it or not, that's a decision. Right. So my kind of duty is to teach people how to transform the way they respond to things.
Okay.
Because when you respond to things in a more sustainable way, your life will go far, your career will go far, you'll make better decisions, you'll have better relationships, you'll travel the world. You know, this is all from being able to accept rejection. Mm-hmm. Because nothing, if you accept rejection, what can stop you?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say I missed your workshop on overcoming creative blocks.
No, it's fine.
That really interested me. I teach screenwriting here, and it's something I see a lot, you know. It's something I experienced a lot. Yep. From this point of view, would you say that getting blocked is also a choice?
I think it's probably is to a certain extent, but obviously creative block is, I think, a lot deeper.
Okay.
You know, it's almost like I see creativity as a sort of like, we're like antennas, like aerials, sort of channeling something from the universe. You know, it's almost like godlike, some mm-hmm. sort of energy, creative, you know, creative spirit. So I think, you know, when you get blocked, it's mostly always because the person isn't doing what they need for themselves. You know? So they probably haven't taken a break. They're probably working in the same shitty little room for like a year. Okay. You know, take your laptop and go sit next to a tree or something. You know what I mean? Like, or maybe they're not eating the right food. Or maybe they're just treating creativity like it's their slave.
Okay.
You know, that's not how we can treat creativity. Like, creativity is like it's our blessing. You know, we have to sort of respect it like a romantic partner.
Okay.
You know, we have to kiss it and, you know, stroke it and love it, you know?
So, right.
But I think when people sort of like crack the whip and say, you know, work for me. Come on, ideas. Come on, creativity. Sometimes the creativity responds like,
no.
No way.
Do you know who you're talking to? This is me. Like, I am everything.
The muse, you know? Right?
See, exactly.
I tell my students that Woody Allen, the filmmaker, he says that writing, you know, making films, but writing is specifically talking about screenwriting. It's a job, he says, you know.
Yeah.
You got to show up. You got to be there at 8 o'clock like it was a regular job.
Totally.
But because that's the only way you can, you know, get ahead.
Yeah.
Pablo Picasso used to say that inspiration exists.
Mm-hmm.
It got to find you working because there's
absolutely.
No, right?
Yeah, totally.
So I say that maybe there are different kind of locks, right?
Yeah, for sure.
There are maybe some deep, like you said, mm-hmm. blocks that come from somewhere else that you need rest, that you need to shift gears, something.
Yeah.
And blocks that come from not wanting to show up, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And not being, I think you got to respect your muse, right?
Totally.
And
man.
Be there. Because she won't find you if you're not working, right?
100%.
Okay.
I think as well, man, like it kind of feeds back into the rejection thing.
Right. Because,
you know, like it's one thing being rejected by other people, but it's another thing rejecting yourself.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And people reject themselves, like everybody rejects themselves one way or another.
Mm.
And I think, you know, that rejection could be quite deep. It could be quite subconscious. And I think when it is deep like that, creativity has a lot of problems, you know, because you won't be in creative flow when you have issues with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when your personal sort of well-being and your opinion of yourself is jaded, like your creativity will follow that same pattern.
Mm.
I think your best creative moments come from sort of not being in the trenches of your mind in terms of like thinking about, you know, deep sort of dark stuff and problems. Like when you're really in flow and creativity, you're hypnotized.
Mm.
You're completely surrendering to like mm-hmm. the force.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if you disrespect that force, like, don't expect any great ideas anytime soon, you know? This
right.
is why I tell people, like, the beautiful thing about modern technology is we can take a laptop away somewhere,
mm-hmm.
even 10, 20 minutes away,
mm-hmm.
next to a tree. You know, change your environment, man. Put a pair of headphones on.
Oh.
Or just close the laptop and go and see a museum or something.
Right.
You know, like, do something different. You know?
I think we also forget that working should be fun, right?
Absolutely.
And if you're
Absolutely.
Not having fun, then there's something
it's,
wrong.
It's playtime.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're all children inside, man. And the first thing you do as a child is you play.
Mm-hmm.
You explore. So when it becomes serious, and this is why I tell people, like, listen, when you get into the music industry and it's all about money and numbers, your creativity really has some problems.
Mm.
Like, I've had so many issues with my ideas and concepts and because I'm in something that's driven by profit.
I tell my students that this is not my idea. I got it from someone else. That half the word screenplay is play. You know, you should be playing.
See,
you should be
exactly.
having fun.
Yeah.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
So now, how is it to be creative and working with people? I mean, how do you cope with that?
In the sense of, like, how do I maintain it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Totally,
You know, I think it's about the relationships.
Okay.
You know, the creativity isn't something you do with strangers. You know, like you build, like I personally build relationships. You know, you're building a fire together. You know, you're building a house together.
Mm-hmm.
That's a song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like it doesn't happen from nothing. It happens from like vulnerability and trust and being open to each other's ideas. You know, and once you have that energy in the room and there's maybe three or four or five of you, sometimes more. It's a beautiful feeling because everyone's mm-hmm. on the same sort of page. And everyone's like, okay, let's do this, you know? And then when you've done it and you play it back or you listen back or you look at it, if it's a not a song, you all feel like you're on drugs, you know, because you've kind of channeled out of yourselves to do this thing together, and you build a friendship.
Yeah.
You know,
The sense of maintaining that creative relationship. But how about start that build of the relationship? Because I was reading about your bio, and man, there's a point that where you start working with Curtis Young, Dr. Dre's son.
Yeah.
How that happened? I mean, you were in Starbucks and
no.
There he was?
I've definitely had those experiences before where you were in Starbucks or something like that. But no, this one was, I think we kept connected online, man. But, you know, I don't want to say too much about him because it wasn't a great relationship in the end, you know. But it was a good experience in many ways.
I can imagine that it's a complicated guy.
Bad business.
Okay.
You know, but you know, we all have good and bad. I don't want to say anything too negative today, but you know, like it was. I was grateful for the experience.
Sure.
We connected online. I went out to California. I lived with him for a while. Worked on a project.
And I ask him because most of our students are afraid or reserved to take that first step.
Yeah.
Of send that email. Said that right. I am.
To the person you admire or the person you want to work with?
How you see that in the actual first steps?
Yeah. I see that stuff really differently because as a child, I had a very different experience. You know, we went to London for like a day trip because I'm from Leicester. It's like a different city. And when we were there, we went to Harrods, which is like a huge department store in Knightsbridge. You know, it's world famous.
Very chic.
Yeah. And at the time, it was owned by Mohammed Al-Fayed, whose son was married, was with Princess Diana. So I went to this store and I was so inspired. I was probably like six or seven years old. And I drew a bunch of designs. Like products, like because they have a Harrods Christmas bear, you know, different things. Mm-hmm. And I drew a cross section of the building, and I for some reason I said to my mum, like, oh mum, could I send this to, you know, the owner of Harrods? And she was like, I don't see why not. So we posted it, and like 9 months later he wrote back and sent me a bunch of toys. But in the letter that he sent, I've still got it, he said, I'm gonna send this to like the team to consider manufacturing this bear.
That's amazing.
And it never happened. But what it did to my brain as a seven-year-old was like, oh my God, I just wanted to share what I did as a kid. Like, look at my drawings. And he blew my mind. Like, I know he died recently, but I told his daughter like a couple of years ago, your dad changed me as a person forever.
It's like a great inception that you ask, you receive.
It just showed me that.
You have to be afraid of.
Yes. See, it just showed me the possibilities that I was unaware of. So what it did was it made me think, okay, so this can happen at a very young age. And you know, when you're that young, your mind is like a sponge. You take information differently.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I don't have any fear of like, if I think of something, I know I can make it happen. I don't know when, but I know I can.
But also a key thing is that your mom said, yeah, do it.
Yeah.
I mean, she never told you like, no, it's not going to happen.
No,
you're going to be rejected.
No,
right. Right.
My mom, yeah, she was amazing, man. She you know, she celebrated us as kids, you know, and the house was not pictures. The house was our pictures. All of the house was our paint artwork as kids. Like, even if it was just scribbles, she put it on the wall.
I love that phrase,
man. To let you know, like she celebrated us, man, and made us celebrate ourselves. So that, growing up in that and the Harrods thing with Mohammed Al-Fayed, you know, it made me realize like, okay, I can get to anybody
that
if
is
I want
amazing.
To. So, you know, you can, yeah. You can. It's all about the approach. Obviously there is a technique, but more so less than technique, it's about your spirit. You know, when your spirit is, if you believe in it, it will happen. You know, they say seeing is believing. I never believe in that. It's the other way around. Believing is seeing. If you believe, mm-hmm. you'll see the results. If you don't believe, you might not.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now we can't leave your pass off through Death Row Records on the side. So
yeah.
How was it? How was this experience?
So I was never really a part of like the real Death Row because that was already gone. you know,
yeah,
in terms
in
of
2008.
It revived like 2 years ago or something.
Yeah,
like that,
that well, that was different because Snoop bought Death Row. Uh-huh. So he owns the catalog, the brands, yeah, the rights. So that's, but when I sort of had an experience with that label was towards the last sort of 2 years of its lifespan. So, you know,
they were making like compilations or
exactly.
anthologies.
I was right at the end, man. Do you know what I mean? So I you know, I did some, I had some involvement, but it wasn't like I was around Tupac and, you know, that was a long time ago. It was more so just I was there at the end before it completely collapsed.
But I suppose that connects some points to your work in the near future.
Yeah, I think it was just crazy because, you know, I grew up listening to those albums. You know, I was a huge fan of West Coast, like gangster rap. And I love Tupac and Snoop and all those guys. And finally kind of working with all those people was, most of them was crazy. Because, you know, I remember playing the CDs. I remember ordering the CDs on import from America to come to Leicester.
Okay.
And then the next thing is like, I'm in the room with these people. Like it was mind, I've never really kind of processed that, I don't think. It's just kind of like a page of my book, which is like, okay, that happened. But again, it's the Harrods thing, man.
Wow.
Do you use that reference to your actual work with the new artists that you are producing? That
the reference of
Death Row?
Not really. Like, if it comes up in conversation, okay, I'll say, yeah. You know, like, for me, it's like I don't really talk about who I've worked with unless it has a relevance.
Okay.
Like here, it's totally relevant because you know you want to know more about me.
Sure.
But when I'm working and I'm in the studio, it's not really the go-to conversation. But you know it. I'm still in touch with a lot of those artists who are signed to Death Row. You know, my mentor was on Death Row.
Yeah.
He's the one who helped me start my career. You know, so he was a producer and rapper that I was a fan of. And this is the man who gave me my career. He helped me get in the door, you know. He gave me the name Powers, actually.
Oh, okay.
I changed it legally like 3 years ago.
Wow. So what's your actual name?
I mean, it's Powers now.
that's the whole idea, right?
That's it.
Because, you know, you think about of it like course. This, like, everyone gives you a name, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
You don't give yourself a name, but in this case, it was kind of like I became that. You know, I became it.
So it's, you know, Powers now.
Yeah.
On my Powers now.
On my passport and everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's who I am, you know.
And it always was.
It always was, man. Yeah, exactly. And I like the meaning, you know, like the word is, it's self-explanatory. It's powerful. Yeah. It's Powers, you know. Right. And also, because when he gave me that name, he was like, oh, you're going to be called Nat Powers. I was like, no, man. Because I was scared of like Austin Powers.
Yeah.
I thought people were going to like laugh at me.
Yeah. But Austin Powers.
He was like, Sam was like, no, listen, you don't understand. Like, because Sam is a visionary. This is why he was Dr. Dre's protege. Mm-hmm. Because Sam is a visionary. Like he gives people things 20 years ahead from now. You know, he's such a genius, man. And honestly, like everything came true because even when I pay my bills on the phone, I give them my name and so many times they say, wow, it's a strong name. And when I go through immigration and when I travel, same thing. Sometimes they look at the passport and they go, Powers. And this is what Sam told me would happen. But I never believed it. But, you know, Sam is a genius.
Wow.
He's a genius.
So going back a little bit to your childhood, and of course, it was like very natural that you were going to pursue the path of music.
Yeah.
I mean, was it very, very natural? Or were fighting for a while if you had to pursue that or if you had to change something in...
That's a good question.
Your career.
I think, you know, the music and career are two different things. I think the career is like making money from it, making like growing, you know, industry. That stuff was like, you know, you force your way into that. Mm-hmm. That no one sort of glides into it because it's such a difficult industry to get into, you know. So you do have to like fight your way in. I think that's how you get strong. But musically speaking, it was natural. I think that was like when I was in my mum's stomach, I think. You know, I was probably listening to things.
Because of everything, you know. Yeah, of course you were listening.
And then, you know, I used to sit up in the corner of one of our rooms and listen to records when I was like 4, maybe 3, and just put headphones on. And like my whole family teased me because I used to like play them parts of songs, like a guitar solo from a Queen song or something. And if they didn't listen, I'd play it again. I'd say, no, you missed it.
You were distracted, so...
Yeah, I think I was studying, like, without knowing it, subconsciously and naturally, as you said, I was learning how to be a producer, you know? I was learning about structure and about, like...
Rhythm.
Feeling, you know, like, it made me... Like, certain things in certain songs, like, as a kid, whether it was Beethoven or Floyd or Queen, it made me feel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt the goosebumps and I felt the emotion, and I think that was my sort of inception as a musician.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
You were connected what I consider a powerful idea of Elon Rubin Rick Rubin. About don't do the art for others.
Yeah.
Do your art for yourself.
Absolutely.
Do you relate the actual work that you are doing? How would you canalize that type of idea?
Yeah. I mean, as he said, the audience comes last, mm-hmm. you know, and I believe that, man, because, you know, if you're doing it for clout or for numbers or for popularity, like I said yesterday, you're mentally ill.
Yeah.
That's a mental illness. You know, like if you're not happy with the friends you have around you and the family and your own company, you're mentally ill. If you need like 100,000 people to tell you you're good, you don't believe you're good.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe you're good, you don't need 100,000 people. If you get 100,000 fans or followers, then that's great because you can monetize that and get leverage from it. But if you need that to feel like you have purpose and you mean something and you have value and you're talented, then that's the wrong way around. You know, that's not sustainable. That's going to basically, even if you do get success, you're basically then going to be in a very dangerous position because you haven't believed from yourself, from the foundation. So all you're going to do is rely on other people to tell you you're great for the rest of your life. And they can make or break you. Too much power in other people's hands.
I suppose that you have working with somebody that revealed to you that they are looking for popularity first.
You see it every day in the music business. The music business is all about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's yes, there's talent involved, of course, because, you know, that it goes without saying, but it's a business. It's not a music hub or a music sort of tribe. Mm. It's a music business. That's the word. Right. It's an industry, like the meat industry, you know, slaughter the animals, conveyor belt. It's the same. Slaughter the artists, put them on the conveyor belt, crank out the money. Give them some money at the front, pay it back. It's a bank. You know what I mean? Like people don't realize the music industry is an industry.
And it's a product.
It's a machine. Yeah. And the product is you.
And profit.
The product is your creativity, which is sacrilegious.
Now, at the same time, I teach my kids here, again, screenwriting. They got to think first about the emotional needs of their audience. I think you can make a movie, you can write a screenplay if you're not thinking what your future audience needs emotionally, because it's all about the emotion, right?
Yeah.
So maybe there's again a balance, you know?
Absolutely.
On pleasing yourself while pleasing others.
Yeah, absolutely. You're so right. There's always a duality to everything, right? You know, I'm a Gemini, I'm crazy. But
my mom was a Gemini.
Oh, really? My mom too. Yeah. So, you know.
And it's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's part of the job, man. But yeah, definitely you're right. There is always a balance to that. Because, you know, like when you create something and it's got a lot of emotion behind it and you were in a certain place spiritually or mentally at that time, other people will resonate because you're doing something innately human and humans relate to human things. So whether you know it or not, you may create something just for you. Like I'm just writing this song, it's just for me, or I'm just writing this script just for me. But it ends up being for millions of people. And yes, sometimes you can like say, I want to do something that like, you know, I want to speak about this thing I went through because I know a lot of people go through that. Like how many songs are there about breakups and, you know,
right.
I think it's just all of essence of being a human. And when you celebrate that and when you embrace that, other people resonate because people need to be reminded of themselves.
Right.
So someone will watch a film and think of their life from a scene.
Right.
Or someone will listen to a song and think of their mum and cry,
mm-hmm.
you know, because maybe their mum played that song, but maybe because something is being said in the song that makes them think of their mum.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is the power of the shared experience. So yes, creativity is very like private. It's very intimate.
Intimate, right.
But eventually it becomes part of the shared experience. And this is a way of making a huge tribe.
Mm.
And we are social animals. Like we need like a village. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, it's a beautiful thing, but it obviously comes with the dangers too, because putting your stuff out to that many people who you don't know.
Right. Scary, right?
It's scary. And they can say whatever they want about your work, you know, and that's also a very risky thing. This is why accepting rejection is going to save your life, because when that stuff happens, you're going to be able to comprehend it. Basically, yeah.
Beautiful answer.
Yeah, thank you.
One of our students actually asked you yesterday that what was the perfect equilibrium between acceptance and rejection.
Yeah,
and you talked something about the yin and the yang. So
yeah, you can't have one without the other. If you didn't have rejection, you wouldn't have acceptance. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one feeds the other, and obviously the acceptance part is, like I said, it's the golden key. That's the part that kind of sets you free. But you wouldn't have to set yourself free without the rejection. You'd just be like ground zero. But so, you know, this is like everything in life. It has like this polarity, this duality, and you can't have one without the other. You can't have heaven without hell. You can't have cold without hot. You know, everything is based on that. You know, that's a universal truth. So I think, you know, in terms of the rejection, it's going to happen. It's going to happen for your entire life. It happened already. You know what I mean? Everyone's had it already. And it will continue to happen. As long as you're here and you're around other people and you have emotions, you're going to feel rejection.
And if you don't reach that equilibrium, you have to know when to let go.
Yeah.
There are ideas, there are projects that maybe they are not meant to be.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. You know, like not everything was ordained to happen, you know? And that's another thing. But that's acceptance. You know, you accept the things you can't change. Like my parents passing away, I can't change that. You know, yeah, it sucks, but I can't change it. I don't have the authority to change it. I didn't have the authority to say, this is when you should die. You know, my mum and dad were always going to die at that time. That was going to happen from the day they were born. You know, and that's because all you ever have is the moment. Like, you don't really have control of the past or the future. Because both of them are ghosts, like they don't exist.
Of course.
They're poltergeists. And
accepting gives you peace of mind, right?
Oh, yeah. It's like taking off the weight from your shoulders. It's breaking the chains off your legs. You know, acceptance is something that, you know, can liberate you. And you know, once you do that, you have so much more space in your mind and in your spirit to do other things. You know, when you don't have this other sort of, you know, we only have so much bandwidth in terms of like speed processing. Like we're like Wi-Fi connection. If you have a low connection, you're not going to get any data. You're not going to get any information. Mm-hmm. But when you have acceptance, it's like getting fiber optic broadband, you know, like you all of a sudden have this like, you know, 10 terabyte spirit, you know, and I think that's powerful because you realize that, wow, like when I look back at myself and all the shit that I put myself through in terms of like rejecting myself, being hyper emotional about stuff, my trauma. Yes, it had validity. It was valid, you know, like my dad leaving my family. Of course, I'm going to not like my dad. You know, that was not surprising. But, you know, when you look back in hindsight, you realize, wow, I was really putting myself through a lot of stuff, you know, and I didn't need to.
Mm-hmm. And that, again, is a choice.
It's
right?
Always a choice.
It's always a choice.
Always a choice, but right. It's not always so conscious. You know, sometimes you can't see it clearly, but it's always a choice. Mm-hmm. So you're always, in that sense, you're always really the author of your life. But sometimes you feel that someone's taken your hands and put them in handcuffs and is writing your book for you. But that's never true. You're always the one that's writing.
Nat, you were telling us off air that you've been living in several countries.
Yeah.
And I would like you to tell us how it is to work in a music industry in another country. Because I think maybe you also felt rejection because of the culture, because of the people you worked with, or because the industry is completely different.
There's been a couple of moments. I think, honestly, again, from the Harrods thing, I think, like, I don't know what it is. Maybe the energy I try and have, you know, it has been 99% good. You know, like, when I go to different countries to work in the industry, it's always an amazing experience. In fact, the hardest for me of experiences is when I'm trying to work in England.
Oh, okay.
I guess it just has a different tempo, a different pace. But when I'm working in other countries, it's a real privilege.
You're like open to new ideas.
Yeah.
New people. New vibes.
New food. I like to look around me and go, wow, I'm far from home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I like going into the deeper side. You know, I'm not the person who goes to the resorts or wants to be comfortable. Put me in the mountains, put me in the barrios. Like, I love connecting with people. And yes, I know you have to be smart because there's danger out there, but I'm also not a stranger to danger. You know, I had a very crazy time in my 20s and my teens. You know, I was in the streets, I was in gangs, you know, I was, you know, nearly went to prison a bunch of times. So, you know, like, I'm not a stranger to it, man. I learned mm-hmm. how to fight in Ireland. So, you know, it's because I'm mostly Irish. So, you know, I'm not a stranger to that. So I think what I see is just people, you know, even in situations where, you know, it's not an ideal area. I feel blessed to be able to see all of this stuff.
Of course.
You know? That's my cue to ask you, and how's Mexico treating you?
It's treating me so well, man. It's like... You know, Mexico feels like, you know, when you go to, like, I don't know, extended family for dinner.
Okay.
You know, it's not like your blood family, but you feel like, you know, you go to, like, I don't know, like your parents had friends from 50 years ago.
You feel related.
Yeah. You're like, and you go to their house and you just feel like you're home. You know, I feel like I've come home. You know what I mean? Like, I've never been here before.
That's nice.
I'm certainly not Latin at all. You know, my Spanish is not incredible, but... You know, like, being here has felt like a brazos grande, you know?
Yeah.
And
the weather helps a lot as well.
Absolutely, especially when you're from England.
Of course, it's really sunny.
We've got bad weather. Not bad weather, but, you know, the weather in England is challenging.
Yeah.
I don't want to say bad, because if I was dying of cancer right now, I'd appreciate any weather.
Of course. Exactly. But tell us, because you're staying here for a while now, right?
Yeah.
In 3 hours or 4 hours, you're leaving to Guadalajara.
Yeah.
And I know you're staying here for a month. So what are you doing? Tell us about your actual projects. Who are you working with?
Yeah, so, I mean, we have... So basically, in Guadalajara, I'm working with Alzada, which is a music label. Mm-hmm. It was the label of Lefty, who unfortunately was killed in December in Guadalajara. And... the other artists on his label is like Tosa One, Neto Peña, Zimir. Mm-hmm. It's all like rap stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I fly back to Mexico City, my two co-producers from Octaves, they arrive on Monday, and we have a production schedule.
Okay.
So we have sessions with Danny Flo, El Malilla. I think we're aiming to work on stuff for Dana Paola, Yeri Mua, Young Lucas, we're going into the Corridos Tumbados stuff.
Oh, okay.
Reggaeton, obviously. We already did a bunch of reggaeton.
What do you think about Corridos Tumbados?
It's amazing. You know, I think
I did it, Goye. Another episode mentioning Corridos
Tumbados. Yeah, man. It's incredible because, you know, when we were in England looking at the industry here, because obviously we had plans to come here and do all this stuff, you know, with people, with the biggest artists, you know, we always aim for the top. It was interesting, man, because you see these artists and they've kind of like got face tattoos, you know, like I have, more than me, and they got like gold teeth. Well, I've got a gold tooth too, but maybe I should just be a Corridos Tumbados artist. But you know, they look like they're going to be like gangster rappers, but when you hear the music, you're like, what? Like, that's so traditional.
Uh-huh.
And obviously what they're talking about can be controversial. It's like for the young generation, you know, like sex and gangster shit or whatever. But yeah, like hearing it with the look of the artist was such an interesting contrast.
It doesn't match, right?
No, it's like, but I think that's beautiful, you know. And obviously, like statistically, looking at the numbers, that genre, man, is crazy.
Well, yes.
It's leading. Yeah. Like Mexico is having its moment right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard some place that this is like the first musical movement that it's inspiring young people to take a guitar and start scratching and see what comes.
Exactly, exacto. It's incredible.
Whether we like it or not,
but
that's the result of Corridos Tumbados.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible because it's keeping like a lot of tradition alive, mm-hmm. you know, and it's commercially doing well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's incredible because for a long time, the world thought that Latin music was gasolina.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Like, which is fine because Daddy Yankee is amazing. But, you know, like, there's a lot more than reggaeton from Puerto Rico. Like, mm-hmm. there's so many different, even more so than corridos. Like, there's stuff happening in Peru, in Argentina. That's why we're trying to work everywhere.
Okay.
You know, we've already been very active in Colombia, like exceptionally active. And obviously now Mexico. And then the future plans is Argentina, Brazil, Panama.
The scene in each of these countries, do you think it's pretty much different?
So different.
Okay.
Because, you know, Colombia is a lot of, Bogota is like a lot of pop music. Mm-hmm. Medellin is like reggaeton, perreo.
Salsa in Cartagena.
See? And then Argentina is a lot of rap. Like trap music is huge there. And Panama is obviously reggaeton, Puerto Rico reggaeton. So yeah, like everywhere has its different flavors. You know, the baile funk is Brazil.
Mm.
You know, that's like their kind of traditional rhythms turned into like urban sound of the favelas, you know. And that's, I think that's the beautiful thing about expanding into different markets is being able to see how many different flavors there are.
And you know, at the same time, like Chava said, grabbing a guitar and just playing is a very punk attitude,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And that's universal again.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Absolutely. Whoops. Yeah, for sure. You know, I think that attitude is how we move culture forward.
Mm.
It's how we bring new music to the forefront of life. You know, like we have grime in England.
Mm.
Grime music is like a very London thing, from East London. And that was basically like the kids from the sort of the hardest areas of East London where life was hard. They did something that was very punk, you know, they're like anti-system, anti-government, anti-establishment. And, you know, I think that's what it's about, man. I think it's like, it's people's soundtrack, you know, it's the soundtrack to people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear different musics and you taste different foods, again, you're far from home.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. Obviously, I miss home, but, you know, like I like to expand my mind and my experience whilst I'm here, because I have a limited amount of time on the earth.
Oh, of course.
So yeah,
it says here you back in 2019 you did this European masterclass tour, a different I don't know how to spell SAE in English.
SAE.
Okay. A different SAE campuses.
Schools of
How do you like ours?
Oh, man.
How do you like Mexico's
campus? Oh, man. Campus? You know, okay. So this I've spoken at almost every single campus.
Hmm.
Almost.
Not
quite, but almost. Yeah. I think Tom Misner told me more than any other person.
Wow.
Yeah.
All the SAEs in Europe?
Almost.
Okay.
All of the ones in the USA. I was a consultant for Switzerland for 2 years, SAE. This one you're talking about was the GSA tour. Mm-hmm. So all Germany, Austria, Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one in London is beautiful, no? It's like a block away of a river. I don't
recall
which one, but...
It's a beautiful part of London.
Yeah.
The campus needs some work, but like it's Haggerston.
If you listen to us, Haggerston. Please.
Oh, they're already on it, man. I'm working with them too, you know. So yeah, I work with this global network on a big level, you know, and I want to do more.
I have to say thank you, man. The other day, one of our promoter team. I was giving a guide tour here in the campus, and you were in a table, I don't know, taking a coffee or something like that. And
and
you bringing out that experience of this is the biggest one. Thank you.
No, you're welcome.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, listen, like.
I was like, I don't have a GoPro near me, so
you had your phone, right?
Man, this campus is special. You know, like
it's not
always about how big it is, how much equipment it has, how many Dolby Atmos rooms it has. You know, that's cool stuff, man. Like, you know, Germany has some mind-blowing campuses in terms of like Munich 2.0. I've not even been, but like they have a room which is like a forest, you know?
Wow.
So, you know, like that's cool, but it's not always about that. It's about the energy.
Mm, you know, the vibe.
The vibe. So, you know, the energy and the vibe here is for me like one of the best I've ever felt.
Wow.
It's like in Avengers, we have the Hulk. We have Tonio.
Tonio, of course. See. No, but you as well. I mean,
oh, thank you.
Everything you've been through and everything you've done and what you talk about rejection and I mean acceptance, and it's really human. I mean,
thank you so much. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know,
really,
thank
your
you.
Your vibe is really nice.
Well, they say your vibe attracts your tribe, right? So it's like, you know, I feel if my vibe is like that, then it's put me in this position to be around this vibe.
Oh, that's
and vice
really
versa.
Nice. That's really nice.
You know,
that's
it,
nice.
It
that's
works
beautiful.
Both, it works both ways, man. You know, I always believe in the exchange. If someone thinks too much about what they're doing for a thing, then their ego has gone out of control.
You know? So what's next for you?
Wow. So me and the boys, the Octaves boys, we're working on the TV series. Mm-hmm. We're planning to take that to Netflix at the end of the year. So
Can we know a little bit about it?
Yeah, I'll cryptically tell you, because obviously there's no NDAs on the table. So yeah, it's us. It's about us. And basically, we are going around the world doing something. Each episode will be a different country.
Yeah.
I can't say exactly what we're going to be doing because it will kill the concept. But yeah, each episode is a different country. And it will kind of be a combination of like showing behind the scenes of us making records for each country's biggest artists, but also each country's like stories, cultures, people, you know, and our individual personalities. Like, I'm the risk taker. I like to, you know, jump out of planes, and, you know, I had a plan in Colombia to get shot with a bulletproof vest and this kind of stuff. You know, I'm the one who'll be like, yeah, I'll do it.
Okay.
And we've all got different personalities. So yeah, we're working on the show. We're in development. We actually finished filming out here for this sizzle, which is like, you know what a sizzle is, like a demo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cause we need to give something to visual to,
right,
to Netflix. And Idris Elba, he's a good friend of mine. And,
wow.
Yeah, and we used to have the same.
Told you.
Oh my God, that's
Thursday.
Yeah, we used to have the same management, and we became cool, and we collaborated because he makes music too. So, you know, I told him about this concept last year, and he was like,
I'm in.
Well, he didn't say I'm in, but he was like, this has legs. You know, this could work. So go and make a sizzle. And I was like, shit, okay. So we got the team together, and yes, on the 25th here we finished filming in Mexico. So for the sizzle. Yeah,
that sounds amazing,
because it has to portray this global series, you know, and that's difficult to do when you don't have the contract,
right?
You have to make it look, you know, you have to be clever with stock footage and, you know, that stuff.
It sounds that it's going to be in a stream services near me.
Of course.
Yeah,
that's,
that's right. The aim, you know. We want to go all the way with it, and so we're working on that. We're gradually just tapping into different markets, you know, going to Italy after Mexico to do the same thing. We just go to a place, work with all the major labels, and just do as many sessions as possible with the biggest artists as possible, and some upcoming ones as well. And we want to leave like so much behind.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have like 100 records from Colombia, you know, from this trip we'll probably have, I don't know, like the aim is 20, 30, 40 records, depending on the sessions, obviously. You know, from there, we're just planning to expand as much as possible. My aim is that we have like a notable record in every single country on the planet.
Okay. Well, sounds exciting. And
thank you.
Like a lot of work, man. So
yeah, I mean, he doesn't stop.
Yeah. No, life is a lot of work, man. You know, so
Nat Powers making stuff, man.
Come on, man.
Never stops.
Thank you.
I really have to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
What's your guilty pleasure on music?
In music. In terms,
yes,
like what I listen to.
No, guilty pleasure is like something you don't wanna
everybody to
admit
you listen to.
I don't hide anything, man.
Right. Like, that's a great, you
know,
answer.
I always tell everyone, everything's on the table for me. You know, like, anything, like, personal.
I feel no guilt.
Yeah, not at all. I don't want to get to an age where I have secrets, you know. I'd rather just be like, if you want to find out, go watch that podcast or whatever, you know. a guilty pleasure, like.
So you listen to everything?
I'm very open-minded, you know. My like I said to you before, like my parents were very eclectic.
Mm-hmm.
So I everything from classical to jazz funk to obviously rap, of course. You know, garage, drum and bass. You know, I listen to different regional musics from different countries. You know, I'm a big fan of different musics in Africa and Asia. I worked in Bollywood for a short time. Did like K-pop in Korea. You know, had some activity in Hong Kong before, lived in Poland, Paris,
Berlin. And also in, you said you were in Africa, right? In a country in Africa?
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah. In Malawi.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've had that experience, you know, so, Yeah, so I don't think I have a guilty pleasure, really.
Oh, okay.
I don't. There's nothing I'm embarrassed about.
No secrets with Nats.
No, there's songs of Justin Bieber I love. You know.
Okay.
You know, if a song is catchy, like, and I sing it in my head, and I can't get it out of my head, like Britney Spears or whatever it is, it's not a guilty pleasure, but it's you know, I know why that's happening.
Uh huh.
You know, those songs are designed to infect your head. Mm-hmm. You know, I do listen to it. I like listening to weird obscure stuff as well, you know, like Mort Garson. There's an album he did called Plantasia.
Okay.
It's like a real cult, you know, it's a famous
heavy
album
stuff.
Yeah, well, it's like he is synthesis, because he was one of the founders of synthesis sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was doing it in the 40s, and this is an album he did with different scents and sounds to help your plants to grow.
Okay.
So, and it came out in the 70s, and then obviously he died at some point.
The mic pointing to the...
Yeah, yeah. He did it in a sense of, like, he found those sweet spots in frequencies that made plants react. And so I listened to that, you know. So it's not a guilty pleasure, but it's just different.
And
out of the standard.
Yeah.
Such thing.
You know, like, I'm trying to really give you something here. Like,
no, I mean...
No. We get the idea.
Yeah. You are too honest. That's fine.
But potentially. I
mean, and any new artist we should listen to?
Anywhere?
Anywhere, yes.
Any kind of music.
Not anywhere, but Mexico too.
But in this area.
Definitely there's an artist I work with in England called Green Tea Peng.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
She's not new. But she's, you know, she's not fully commercial.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's her choice, because she has a very cool following. Even in Mexico, she does shows out here sometimes. Okay. And she's kind of like psychedelic, alternative rock, R&B, soul. She's very cool. Very cool. I produced a few things for her, you know, I'm working on the album now. And she's very, very, people celebrate her, because she's like, covered in like Hindu tattoos, and she's very, very a special kind of spirit, you know. And I call her like sister, you know. That's, I'm like, hey sis, what's going on, you know. It's a good relationship. It's deeper than music. The first song I did for her, it was called Your Mind, it was basically a song that she was basically what she's talking about in the lyrics is she's having a conversation with her mind.
Okay.
So, you know, you have your thoughts, and then you have the thing that observes your thoughts. So she wrote the song from those two perspectives. So it's really deep. And halfway through making it, two events happened that made it a really special experience. And one, one of her closest friends killed himself. So it was quite relative to the subject of your mind. And I did my Hongos experience, and then, yeah, like, forgave my dad. But also, halfway through making the production, I did psychedelics, and when I came back to the production, I added three genres to it.
Okay.
So it was like four genres in one song. So it's a journey. So it goes from sort of progressive rock, Led Zeppelin kind of sound, to Motown, to 70s dub reggae, to, like, there's so much elements in there, man. But it's a journey. And, you know, she said it's the best song she's ever done. I think it's the best work I've ever done.
Well, it sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's hear new artists or something here in Mexico.
We're still really learning the market here, you know.
Okay.
But there's so many artists here. Like, you know, like when we were getting the sort of lists, the rosters from the labels, like, who do you want to work with? Which is amazing. There was a lot. You know, we had to really study big lists. So I'm still learning it. But I mean, there are fantastic artists here. I can't like name one off the top of my head who is like one to watch as such. But, you know, I think everyone that I mentioned earlier on in the podcast that we're working with are all incredible artists, mm-hmm. You know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, Nat, it was an amazing, amazing podcast. Thank you very much this conversation.
Yes,
very
thank
interesting.
You. Thank you. And thank you. Thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you for celebrating the anniversary of SAE with
us. It's amazing.
And
looking forward
to more. Yeah,
Thank you.
Many more to come. I'll be here for the 20th, the 25th,
yeah.
The 30th,
for sure.
The 40th. I might be in a wheelchair, but I'll be here.
And looking forward as well to see your program. I mean,
yeah. We'll get it there.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it will
Maybe
take.
Maybe you were going to be here in an anniversary next year or 2 years from now presenting the series.
Yay.
Maybe it can be a part of the series.
Sure. Oh, okay.
That would be really
okay.
nice.
We'll make it happen.
You're making hype out of this. but thank you.
That's how it works. Sometimes you have to, man.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. Where can we follow you?
Oh, yeah. Nice. I'm only on Instagram. I don't have any other distractions. Mm-hmm. Nat Powers, that's it. Shoot me a DM, ask me a question, whatever. I'm always open.
Great.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much. Muchísimas gracias a todos ustedes por escucharnos. Un gran programa. Gracias, Chava. Gracias, Camarillo.
Gracias a ti, Goya.
Gracias, Nat. Bien,
gracias.
Something
gracias.
You'd like gracias. To say in Spanish? sí.
No sean groserías.
Hasta luego.
I do want to say something, man, but I know it's just going to be something dumb that I've learned from Duolingo.
Not
like,
bad words.
Tu perro es muy aliente.
That does it. That does it. Yeah.
No, how do you say, like, stay powerful?
Mantente fuerte, poderoso.
Mantente fuerte.
Sí.
Mm-hmm. Sí, ok. Mantente fuerte.
Sí.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Pues manténganse fuertes. Nos vemos en la próxima. Muchas gracias por este episodio. Gracias al equipo de Resonancia.
Gracias.
Hasta la próxima. Yo soy La Goye.